I'm John Kroll. This month marks the 100th birthday of the Indiana Red Cross. As part of the centennial celebration, the Red Cross plans a series of events and initiatives. On No Limits today, we're going to talk about the big birthday party and about what the Red Cross has been, is, and will be. My guests are Barb Corey, Chief Development Officer for the Red Cross's Indiana region, and Duchess Ajay, Red Cross Regional Communications Director. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about a big birthday for the Indiana Red Cross. It is the 100th birthday, so we're going to be talking about all things centennial in regard to the Red Cross during the coming hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Barb Corey, who is the Chief Development Officer for the Indiana region, and Duchess Ajay, who is the Regional Communications Director, Indiana, both for the Red Cross. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you both here. So let's start first by talking about the birthday party itself. We'll start with the party, and then we'll get to the weightier issues afterwards. What all is involved in helping the Red Cross, the Indiana Red Cross, turn 100? Duchess, I'll start with you.
Yeah. So 100 is a big, big feat for us. And, you know, we've been celebrating all year long. We've had blood drives. We've installed smoke alarms. We've had parades and festivals all across the state. And this is certainly the culmination of our big birthday party on the Circle, October 15th, Saturday. And there will be kind of two components. The first component is a VIP party, and that will be from 5 to 7, where we recognize our donors and sponsors and other special guests. And then they'll have an opportunity to paint a mural that will also kind of from there be taken outside to the big party from 6 to 10. And that will be where we invite the entire community to come and to join us and to be a part of our big celebration.
And that will be outside, and it will be...
So you're hoping for nice weather.
It's going to be... It's a high of 76 and a 10% chance of rain. So we're very hopeful. But we'll have live bands. We'll have food trucks. Sun King is generously supplying the mobile beer unit. We also have a mobile wine unit. And really what we're... The whole purpose of this event is to help us recruit volunteers, especially a younger demographic. Our average age of volunteers is 65, which is great. They've been with us for a long time, and we rely on them. They're the backbone of our volunteer program. But the Red Cross, 97% of our workforce is volunteer. And so by having kind of a young, hip event outside where it's going to be a lot of fun, we'd really love to encourage not just millennials, but young professionals and older people as well. It's going to be a great time, but we really want you to consider signing up to become a volunteer at the Red Cross.
What do you need volunteers to do? I mean, if that's primary focus, what are you going to be asking them to do?
Well, we have volunteers at every single level of our organization. So our disaster response teams, those are not Red Cross employees. They're almost exclusively volunteers. We do have staff that certainly provide direction and are there on the ground with them. But we have volunteers on call every single day of the year. We have them also at every other level throughout our organization. In our fundraising efforts, we have volunteers who are key leaders for us in our board. We also have volunteers in communications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have several volunteers. And, you know, as you can imagine, you know, we have a big melting pot here in Indiana. And so, you know, we look for volunteers who, you know, have bilingual capacities and can speak different languages, who, you know, can speak to the media and can, you know, do different levels of communication, graphic design and things. But as Barb said, we do have volunteers in all different aspects of the organization.
So do you have a goal for how many that you want to try to recruit out of the event?
Our goal, we want the most possible. So
most, <okay. laughs>
we want to go overboard. You know, we just launched a huge campaign, Feel the Power of Volunteering. And, you know, mm-hmm. we have billboards across central Indiana. And so, you know, we really are targeting all different types of people, ages to, you know, consider joining the Red Cross or think of us first when thinking about volunteerism.
And I will say, if someone signs up there on the spot to volunteer with the Red Cross, we also have these really cool Red Cross hats that we're giving out mm-hmm. As someone signs up. So it's a tchotchke, but it's a cool one. So we really want to get rid of all the hats for sure. So that's 300 at a minimum.
So in terms of, and to help people, since this is the focus, and I am going to drag us back at some point to the events and the history of the Red Cross as well. But since we're talking about volunteers and that's the primary focus of this, what kind of time commitment do people who agree to volunteer make? I mean, I'm thinking, you know, there are probably a fair number of people out there thinking, okay, if it's disaster relief and I'm supposed to go down to Florida right now and God knows how long I'll be down there, my employer might not sign off on that and I need to keep working. So how does that work in terms of the kinds of commitments that people make in terms of the time commitments?
Well, it depends on really what they're signing up to do and to volunteer for. If they're deployed, and we don't just deploy someone, they have to go through a series of classes. Mm-hmm. But if they're deployed, typically we ask for a 2-week commitment. So you're right, sometimes working with their employers, they have to work that out ahead of time. However, in Indiana, we have some really generous employers, like Eli Lilly and Company. They allow their employees to deploy with us on disaster responses, and then they still get their whole salary. So I think it's up to 2 weeks that one of their employees can deploy, and they don't need to take paid time off. They still it's as if they are an employee still for that organization. And one of the reasons behind that is when a disaster strikes, and we know this is all across the country. Mm-hmm. About, if it's a major disaster, about 40% of the businesses in the impacted area never reopen. So when you have a section of your workforce that's trained to respond to a disaster, either large or small, you're building a resiliency within your organization that you normally wouldn't have. So it really is a win-win. It's also a track for leadership development. These folks, they are volunteers. Really play a lead role, and they're given a lot of responsibility. And it's a chance for them to develop their own leadership potential along a curriculum that the Red Cross has sent. But I will, I'll let Duchess talk about some of our shorter-term volunteer opportunities.
Sure.
Yeah, and, you know, the Red Cross obviously is known for disasters. You know, that's mm-hmm. our big, sexy, you know, service line. But we have four other: international services, biomedical, our preparedness, health, and safety services, so CPR, swimming lessons, mm-hmm. and things like that. And then we have our service to armed forces, which is how we got our start with Clara Barton, our founder. And so, you know, with volunteers, I always ask the first question is, what is your time commitment? What can you, you know, what is your time commitment to us? And kind of go that route, because, you know, we realize that people don't have, you know, hours and hours or days and days and months. But, you know, there is always something for anyone that is looking to get involved. And we can engage with them on any kind of capacity and level.
And we also even need people who come in to answer the phones for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We just recently went through our own disaster. Yeah. And it was really all hands on deck. Even if someone could just be there for an hour, yeah. It really helped us with the workload.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Red Cross in connection with its centennial anniversary. Many of the festivities are this Saturday. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So take me back 100 years ago to the start of the Indiana Red Cross. You know, what were the surroundings, the motivations for its genesis? I'll start with you, Barb.
So it happened after the Civil War. And the Red Cross, you know, of course, was started by Clara Barton. Mm-hmm. And the reason it was started is that they saw—
That's the American Red Cross.
The American
I
Red
want to
Cross.
Make sure. No. Civil War, the historians out there are going to be saying, okay, that's 50 years earlier.
Right.
Than,
that's yeah. right. But Clara Barton did actually have yeah. a farm in Bedford, Indiana. I have to put okay. that out there.
Right.
But one of the things that the Red Cross knew that we had to have a local expression in these local communities. And so the American Red Cross— in about 1916, approached some of our community leaders and said, do you think you could start a Red Cross organization in Indianapolis? And the real requirement was they had to sell 300 sponsorships. At the time, sponsorship is a kind of an antiquated term. What they really meant was you have to sell or raise money enough mm-hmm. for 300 sponsorships. And they thought it would probably take about a year to do this. And William Fortune, mm-hmm. He was closely mentored by Colonel Eli Lilly mm-hmm. and was a contemporary of J.K. Lilly. They all kind of got together and said, what can we do? They had an event at what is now the Skyline Club mm-hmm. and invited other important community leaders. They engaged schools. They engaged other organizations, both corporate and not-for-profit at the time. And in one day, they raised enough money to establish the American Red Cross in Indianapolis.
How much money was that? I mean, it's one of those things that I'm sure is going to just stun us today.
Well, it was about $350,000.
Well, that's actually a fair amount of money even in today's world. Mm-hmm. It was a staggering sum, though, for that era.
And Eli Lilly and Company kicked in a portion of that. And really, it was a time, William Fortune, to kind of band together with the rest of the community and establish something that clearly, who knew at the time if it was going to be really important? And mm-hmm. it turns out it was. And so they did a great job.
So what sorts of things were they doing in 1916 here in Indianapolis?
A lot of it was around a war effort. Mm-hmm. Both William Fortune and J.K. Lilly, at about the same time after they established the Red Cross, also established the Chamber of Commerce and then the War Chest. Mm-hmm. And the War Chest then became the United Way of Central Indiana. So a lot of it was trying to raise money for infrastructure for our city. It was still kind of a little bit of a wild place back then.
So these three things were occurring at pretty much the same time then, overlapping initiatives. And all of that. So, but the Red Cross, if I remember my history correctly, and I'm sure we have enough history teachers or professors out there to correct me, technically in 1916 we weren't at war yet because we didn't enter until 1917, and the war ended then in 1918. So, was the Red Cross founded here in anticipation that the war was going to come to Indiana, or
it was?
Okay.
It was. And in fact, some of the monies and dollars that were pledged were contingent on if we enter the war, then we can also access this other pot of money.
Okay. So it was built with the idea, okay, we got to get ready
right.
for all of this. How did it, because a lot of those, for lack of a better term, kind of relief operations in regard to World War One did not endure. There were many of them. What was it about the Red Cross that allowed it to continue, not just at a national level, but in places like Indiana and around the country?
I think it actually...
I'd like to hear both of your thoughts
sure.
on that.
Yeah. I think part of the reason was it wasn't just a local initiative. It was started back in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And so it had a lot of individuals and great thinking behind it, and not only how to construct it, but what it actually meant and what it meant to be a humanitarian in a time of war and to take our wounded soldiers off the battleground to get treatment and to have some immunity around it. And I think it was big enough thinking, and that's one of the reasons it endured.
Your thoughts, Duchess?
Well, you know, the Red Cross has such a, you know, huge imprint in our society and the fabric of our society. And I think that, you know.
Or the red badge, as a lot of people call it.
Right.
Times, yeah.
And I think people really just, you know, think of it as a, you know, premier organization. We always like to say that, you know, it's Coca-Cola and then the Red Cross as far as brand recognition. And I think, you know, I think back then it was that kind of same thing. You know, people relied on the Red Cross so much. And what we're seeing now, 100 years later, is that that same, you know, reliance and the resiliency. So it's pretty powerful.
So it drove home because people wanted to respond to that kind of call.
Correct.
Absolutely.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Red Cross's big birthday celebration. The Red Cross turns 100 this year. Big party this Saturday, October 15th. We're going to be talking about that and a lot of other initiatives. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Barb Khoury, she's the Chief Development Officer for the Indiana Region of the Red Cross, and Duchess Ajay, who is Regional Communications Director for the Indiana Region of the Red Cross. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about the Indiana Red Cross's centennial big birthday party this Saturday evening. My guests are Barb Khoury, she's Chief Development Officer for the Indiana Region, and Duchess Ajay, who is the Regional Communications Director. They're both obviously with the Red Cross. We were talking sort of about the, before we went to the break, about the beginnings of the Red Cross. And it did sort of originate as, you know, a source of battlefield salvation. But the mission over time clearly evolved into something that was a little more encompassing, the disaster relief, all of that sort of stuff. Could you walk me through, and could you walk our listeners through, the evolution of that mission, how, you know, the Red Cross gradually began to take on a larger portfolio? Sure. Either one of you? Barb?
So the Red Cross, in and of itself, we try to build resiliency within a community. And over the last 135 years nationally, and certainly 100 years here, there's lots of things that we've discovered that build community resiliency. One of them is making sure that people know how to give CPR or use an AED or babysitting or lifeguarding classes. And that has become one of the backbones, one of our lines of service. Another one is disaster response. We respond not just to large disasters, but the Red Cross, over many, many, many years, we also respond to home fires. So we say disasters large and small. Mm-hmm. Indiana, unfortunately, is in the top 10 states for death and injury due to home fires. So that's a top priority for us. We have a whole national campaign. We respond, on average, to three home fires every day in central Indiana, and then more around the state. We show up as the firemen are putting out the fire. And one of the things people don't think about is when that fire is put out and the firemen go away, that family is still standing on their lawn in front of where their house used to be, mm-hmm. oftentimes in their pajamas, certainly with no wallets. And what the Red Cross does, and these are our volunteers that are on call every night, what the Red Cross does, we meet the family at the house or the apartment. We put them up in a hotel for a couple days. The next day they come in and we connect them to our caseworkers, which are not volunteer. Those are paid mm-hmm. staff. And we get the resources that they need. So we'll help with first and last month's rent. We help connect them to services, and we get them back on their feet. So that home fire piece is something that's an integral part all across the country, but especially here. Another part of that resiliency is working with our services to armed forces. On my first day of work, we were at a board meeting, and mm-hmm. board members were sharing their Red Cross story. And the gentleman who was sitting next to me said, my brother was in Afghanistan, and our father was dying. And so I called his commanding officer, and I said, we need to get him home. And he said, to our board member, we don't do that. The Red Cross is the only organization that occupies that space. So we're the only ones that are that communication piece between our military, all of our armed forces, and then the loved ones back home. And so all of this, to me, is just that framework for helping neighbors help neighbors. Again, going back that 97% of our workforce being volunteer, it really is neighbors helping neighbors.
How did that, though, Duchess, because it does strike me that, you know, at some level, it's a cliche to say whenever there's a bad situation, the first thing you have to do is stop the bleeding. But literally, that's sort of where the Red Cross started, is we're going to stop the bleeding and the dying on the battlefield if we can. We're going to ease that to a much more all-encompassing, we're going to serve communities, we're going to try to, you know, to use this term, build resiliency into communities. How did that evolve from that original battlefield kind of experience? How did it grow into being something that's a much more holistic approach to dealing with questions really of human misery?
Yeah, I think as society, you know, continues to evolve, those things kind of, you know, those gaps have been where the Red Cross, you know, fills. And, you know, for instance, the biomedical side of our service line, we supply 50% of the nation's blood supply. That's a huge number. Obviously, we have partners, you know, who, you know, fill in the rest of that. But, you know, when tragedy happens, when trauma happens, you know, blood is a huge, huge thing for us. And so, you know, over time, you know, the American Red Cross has come in for, you know, that kind of side of things.
I would also say, too, a lot of it goes back to our national structure. As a national organization, we have said we have five lines of service, and every single Red Cross has those five lines of service. However, there's also local expression. And until recently, I mean, as recently as maybe even 8 years ago, we would have a phrase that said, when you've seen one Red Cross, you've seen one Red Cross. Because on a local level, there were also many other things that they responded to. Even in Indiana, we had some that had a food bank. We had some that had, you know, transportation programs. So it really is kind of plugging, as Duchess said, those gaps that we've identified within with a national framework.
Maybe it's an easier question than to say, what are the things that the Red Cross doesn't do? I know, having been in that situation, because people think that it is all-purpose relief, and there are some things that you probably are not willing to get involved in.
Well, there are so many things, you know, that we do help with. But, you know, during disasters, we are always talking about, you know, volunteerism. We need volunteers to help. And then, you know, obviously when tragedy happens, you know, we rely on the public to provide us monetary donations. And so we also have the very popular question that people ask us is, hey, can I donate, you know, a sweater? Can I donate, you know, pants to help? Because obviously that's the first thing that people want. They want to give back in some way. But for that, you know, to get people the immediate needs that they need, often, you know, cash is that first thing that people need to get so they can buy their own things with that, their own items.
And let me just underline that, too, for Duchess. We don't accept clothing. We don't accept household goods. It's too expensive for us to move it. But we know what partners do have that. And so feel free to call us during times of disaster, and we'll help you navigate to an organization that's what they do. We have organizations that are partner with us that all they do are shoes. That's not us. So, but we can help you connect.
But you can provide the introduction.
Absolutely.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Red Cross's centennial. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter @WFYI, or you can do what our regular listener Gary has done and reach out to us on Facebook. You can find us there at nolimits@WFYI. Gary says, I have a question about the main demographic being served by the organization. Or as he puts in parentheses, do the organizations primarily assist one gender? If so, how can the organization address the issue better? Is there one group that you tend to serve more than any other?
Duchess is shaking her head, so I'm going to go with her first.
Yeah, we help anyone and everyone. And, you know, I can't continue to highlight, can't stop continuing to highlight that, you know, for volunteers, we look for volunteers of all different types of demographics, ages. I mean, that's really important to us. And the people that we serve is anyone who needs help.
That's right. However, there is a difference between the clients that we serve in home fires and typically in disasters. With disasters, these are folks, you know, they span the gamut. There's certainly no one gender that we serve. It's everybody. But in home fires, we tend to serve more people who are on the brink of poverty. And typically a home fire is enough to push them over the edge. When we show up to homes that aren't in a lower SES, oftentimes I'll say thank you, but, you know, thank you for the blanket, first of all, because I was in my pajamas.
Yeah.
But I don't need you to put me up in a hotel. We're going over to my mother's or something like that. So depending on what it is that we're responding to, there are nuances and differences. But we, as Duchess said, we are there for everybody.
So what is the greatest demand? Because, you know, obviously the high profile stuff and the big disaster. What is the greatest demand on the Red Cross's resources?
Home fires.
How much does that cost the organization over the course of a year, would you say?
Well, I know that there's probably more than $7 billion with a B damages from home fires. So, and that's obviously a national statistic. But here in Indiana, as Barb said, that's our huge, huge concern.
That's where the bulk of our budget goes to, is in our disaster budget, is responding to home fires. We don't tend to have a lot of disasters in Indiana that are large. I say that ironically after we just went through flooding in South Bend and tornadoes in Kokomo.
Yes, yeah. And tornadoes have always been sort of
right.
A reality here. We're in Tornado Alley. We've got a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air. Wants to know why Indiana ranks so high in home fire statistics. Is there a reason that anyone's identified? Or
not to our knowledge, but, you know, obviously we do our very best to continue to try to, you know, put that education and, you know, build that resiliency. But we couldn't touch on why.
Their causes? Is it faulty wiring? Is it somebody? What is it?
It is cooking fires, so kitchen fires, and it's smoking in bed. And that's been the same for, you know, a very, very long time. And it's also using alternative sources of fuel in the winter months. So someone who had perhaps the gas turned off might use a propane heater instead, and that's a really dangerous situation.
So it sounds like it hits disproportionately, obviously, the folks who are lowered down on the wage and pay scale.
And also
higher up on the poverty index.
Absolutely.
And especially it affects women and children more so than anyone else.
So in terms of what are the services, if people want to access, is it an automatic thing with the home fire that if there's a fire, do you have volunteers who are sort of sitting next to the
yes.
fire department scanner, and they say, okay, we got a problem here?
We actually deploy them. So currently we have someone who wants to respond to the home fires. They sign up for a two-week shift. And then every time that a call comes into our office, we call who's ever on call and say, can you get to that fire? You know, will it take you 5 minutes? Great. This is also one of the reasons why our structure has changed so much over the years. With the advances of technology, we no longer need to have a Red Cross building or a storefront in every county, because we have such better technology now. We can consolidate our business operation and save money, and then use our volunteers with, you know, either by the phone or pager. We probably don't even use pagers anymore, but along those lines.
Yeah, it's like ad, you know, the 1980s call, they want your fax back.
Right.
You know, yeah.
And also, too, you know, this month is National Fire Safety Month. So
Yes. It's
a huge one. And we have great partners with our fire stations. And so, you know, they also reach out to us and they will call our volunteers.
Yep.
They'll call our disaster folks and, you know, they'll say, you know, hey, fire over here. Can you have someone come out, or can you have some folks come out and help us?
Now, what kind of training? You said they go through a training period to do all of it. What kind of training? What does that encompass? What are they prepared to do?
So, you know, our training is set up in a couple different ways, but a lot of it is online, just because, of course, that's the nature of, you know, how most of it is. And it just goes through, you know, the ins and outs of what someone might expect, you know, damage assessment and that kind of stuff.
And also, how do you load what we give? As Dutch has already said, we don't give stuff, but we do give like a card. A client assistance card, which is just like a Visa gift card. Mm-hmm. Typically, we load it, you know, with, I don't know, $500, whatever it is, depending on the family's situation. But we also have to then have that loaded by another volunteer for internal quality controls. So it's kind of it's a pretty complex organization and operation. But we've been doing it long enough that it works.
Mm-hmm. By quality controls, you want to make sure that it's going toward
the right person.
Well, and also presumably, are there controls about the way they spend it? There's nothing to stop anyone from going and spending it on a 75-year-old bottle of scotch.
Well, you can't buy alcohol,
okay.
And you cannot buy firearms.
All right.
But we don't tell you, like, that doesn't look good on you. Don't buy that sweater.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it's also good to note too that immediate needs is the highlighting couple words. You know. Obviously, as Barb mentioned before, we have partner organizations that we can, you know, link, you know, folks who have gone through, you know, a disaster. But immediate needs is the key there, because after that, we do try to, you know, get them at a stage where they are not relying on us or our partners and are able to kind of get back as close or, you know, surpassing where they were before.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Red Cross's centennial, its big 100th birthday celebration, which is this Saturday. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So we've established you need volunteers, and I'll be charitable. You need volunteers who are of a younger vintage.
Grapes to complement our
existence. Yes, grapes that are a little less mature on the vine. Where are the biggest areas of need in terms of your volunteer structure? What are the tasks that people seem to be the most reluctant to sign up and say, I will do? Duchess.
Well, I know our CEO would probably like us to say that, you know, we really need volunteers in all capacities of what we do, because we are, you know, there's only 24 hours in a day. And, you know, typically for us, about 10 of those are spent at work. But, you know, I know for me, you know, as in communication, I am always looking for volunteers who can do, you know, different things within communication. And so I think, you know, all of the folks within our organization are looking for, you know, volunteers who, you know, can really do anything. And we will fit them in, you know, different parts of our organization.
And I would also say, too, that we know that we need to really build a robust disaster response team in Central Indiana. That clearly is a focus for us. And it doesn't have to be someone who is on call for 2 weeks or deploys for 2 weeks. There's lots of different jobs within disaster and disaster relief and response that are open to anybody.
So maybe the other way to address this then is to say, what are the most popular areas, the places where you have plenty of volunteers already?
I don't think there's a single place that we have plenty of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Has it always been this way? Or is this one of those generational things that a lot of not-for-profits are dealing with, that they're finding that sort of the altruistic spirit is taking different forms now? Barb?
So we hear a lot of talk about millennials being a little more inwardly focused, mm-hmm. And not as philanthropic. I don't necessarily think that that's true. They might not donate it as much, but that isn't necessarily a generational thing. If they had more money, they'd probably be donating more. But one of the things, like, for instance, Sandy taught us is historically, we have not done a very good job with spontaneous volunteers. If someone said, hey, I want to go help right now. I'm right next to Hurricane Matthew. I want to jump in. We might say, well, you have to take some courses. And, then we looked at ourselves and we said, do we really need courses to set up a cot? But Sandy taught us when there was no power and we had somebody up on the 28th floor that had to come down, you needed that 28-year-old young man to say, okay, I'll run up and get her. And historically, our volunteers wouldn't have been able to do that.
We are talking about the Indiana Red Cross's 100th birthday here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Barb Curry and Duchess Ajay. They are both with the Red Cross. They're regional development and communications officers, respectively. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the Indiana Red Cross's centennial celebration this Saturday, but more events scheduled really pushing out from there and have been going on through this year. My guests are Barb Curry. She is the Chief Development Officer for the Indiana Region of the Red Cross, and Duchess Ajay, who is the Regional Communication Director for, again, the Indiana region of the Red Cross. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Nikki has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Nikki, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
My question is for Duchess. I am a student at Butler, and I'm a communications student. So I was wondering, how can I volunteer? Like, do you have things that I can do? I mean, I blog and I Snapchat. I don't know if you guys have Snapchat, but I'm just really curious.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Nikki.
Thank you, Nikki. A couple things you can do. We're not that far from the WFYI building. We're actually neighbors.
Like a block of that. Yeah.
Yes. 1510 North Meridian Street, if you want to come by our office. But you're more than welcome to call right now, 317-684-1441.
Go ahead and give them that again.
Absolutely. 317-684-1441. And we will definitely connect with you immediately.
Mm-hmm. And is it that easy? I mean, is there a URL or a place that they can reach out online to?
Absolutely. They can go to redcross.org if internet is, easier for them. But it is really that easy for them to call and get set up immediately.
Okay. But I guess if you're plugging in, do you have on your website lists of volunteer opportunities or a way that they can just check off and say, this is the kind of stuff I'd be interested in doing, or at least that I'd feel comfortable in doing, or anything like that?
We do. So if you go to our website, redcross.org, you can go to our local area, Indiana, and in the volunteer section, it has a list of so many volunteer opportunities that, really, it just depends on the type of person and what they're interested in. And if there are other things that they're looking to get involved in, obviously they can call and, ask about those things.
So let's talk a little bit. We've talked a lot about the past and the evolution of the organization. Where's it going from here? I mean, do you see, it started as what was kind of a battlefield salvation organization, primarily in the physical sense, although there were some spiritual components too, clearly. And then out of that grew into this sort of, we're going to try to be there to help whenever something bad happens. Where does it go from here?
I think we're just going to stay steady. One of the things that we've done over the last few years is consolidate our operations. Sometimes in the community, it might feel like, well, my Red Cross just left. And that's not it at all. We have so many houses that were bequeathed to us from donors. And that's what we typically set up in each county is an old house. And that just cost us too much money. So I would look for us to stay focused on our five lines of service and then streamline. We're not leaving a community. We're just we're consolidating. And that allows us to get more service out to our clients.
It sounds like, though, there's anxiety about that people like the visible presence, too. How are, and this is more a question for Duchess since it's a communications issue, how are you dealing with that?
Well, you know, I touched on earlier at the segment our Feel the Power of Volunteering campaign that actually kicked off last Monday, October 3rd. And it's just things like that. You know, we are going to set up billboards, and obviously, you know, segments like this help us, you know, continue to push our presence and awareness out there. You know, PSAs, both audio and visual. So, you know, I think it's things like that and, you know, really just kind of, you know, really being a part of other, you know, parades and festivals throughout, because we do want to connect with all different types of demographics so that they know that the Red Cross is present and there.
Mm-hmm. Is it because it's got to be a source of significant concern that the average volunteer age for you is 65. Is that is that the average age or is that the median age?
It's the average age.
It's the average age. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's got to be some concern that, you know, if that is 97% of your workforce, you could have a really – what are the contingency plans for if you don't get a lot of new volunteers, or are there?
Well,
is it other than, you know, step back and bang my head against the wall as hard as I can? Yeah.
It really is – we're laser-focused on getting more volunteers. Primarily because, first of all, we need them to deliver our mission, and we're very cognizant of our aging volunteer population. And it's a great way to learn from someone who's done it for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So we're going to stay laser focused until we feel that we have enough.
And just to couple that, I think that you know, Nikki was just the caller who spoke, and she's a Butler student. You know, we do have lots of presence in our colleges and universities, both locally and around the state. And we're going to just kind of continue to push that momentum so that they know that we are here. And, you know, I think that is going to be really important for us kind of moving forward, too.
Are there places where you can't get involved right now that you would like to because of either lack of volunteers or lack of resources in other ways? Well, Duchess, you look like you have ideas.
Well, you know, we're working with a bunch of different groups. And in particular, we have a group by the name of Collabo. And they are helping us, as Barb said, laser focus our volunteer experience. And so they're looking at ways, they're helping us look at ways on how we can, what our volunteers are looking for, what they need from us, what maybe they don't particularly like. And we're trying to kind of fix those things. Another group is Luna Languages, and they are great partners of ours because, you know, they obviously have so many different languages and, you know, resources to kind of connect with those demographics. And so, you know, we're looking at them to kind of help us as well.
Is there also a challenge, Barb, because it's more a development question, the time when the Red Cross's profile is the highest is when things are going really, really bad.
Yes.
Somewhere.
Right.
You know, a lot of people are in misery and all of that, and I am assuming donations spur and people think, oh, okay, yes, I do need to write that check to the Red Cross right now. Probably not quite as present in people's minds when things aren't, you know, aren't at the disaster stage. How do you make the case then that, you know, you should continue to support the Red Cross and keep it on your priority list, even when, you know, the earth isn't shaking or, mm-hmm. you know, the sea isn't crashing into shores somewhere or something like that?
So we were early adopters of the home fire campaign because, as we already alluded to earlier, this is that's a real challenge for us in Indiana. I find your question really interesting. We never really relied on disaster fundraising in Indiana, mm-hmm. primarily because we're pretty immune. I mean, we've got a lot of corn here, mm-hmm. not a lot of disaster. We went through a period of 21 months when there was not a major disaster. And during that, at the end of that year, this was actually a year and a half ago, Indiana, we were in the top three of dollars raised, primarily because our focus is not on disaster response. It is building community resilience. And the reason is, for every dollar that we raise for community resilience in our programs, we save $4 to $7 on the back end of disaster response. And that's where we hang our hat.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Red Cross's centennial celebration. They've got a big birthday party this Saturday evening. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So we've talked about the two big events in regard to the birthday and the other things that have been going on. Where does it go from here? I mean, the birthday, it sounds like, is a kickoff. What are some of the events and initiatives that are going to be rolling out from this? Duchess.
You know, the biggest thing that we're focused on, again, we've spoken about it quite a bit, is volunteers and just the need to, you know, fuel that volunteer spirit. And, you know, the whole premise of the Feel the Power of Volunteering campaign is, you know, whatever people think a Red Cross volunteer is, you know, we want to kind of inspire others to join our cause and, you know, think of us first. Even if they're not thinking about volunteering, maybe later down the line they'll think about volunteering with us. And we want to be among the top that people think about for the Red Cross.
And I would also add, you're not going to see a bunch of special events. Mm-hmm. We don't think that special events raise very much money. We would much rather have conversations.
You're right about that.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah. We actually we've eliminated all 57 special events around the state of Indiana. We lifted the ban for this year because it's our 100th anniversary. However, the ban goes back into place the day after our event this Saturday. So you need to come out and join us because we're not going to do this again. But what we do instead,
or at least another 100 years.
Exactly.
Yes. Then you can join us again. But what we do instead is we have conversations with our donors and potential donors. It's all about mission. It is not about you'll get a table. We don't have benefits like that. So you're not going to see anything big and splashy, but you will see us with our head down getting the work done.
What is the reluctance? You know, if I'm assuming, because you say you do have a volunteer challenge here, have people said what their reluctance is? I mean, have you studied why they say they are reluctant to commit to helping the Red Cross? What does that research show?
I mean, I think, you know, just society and how it has changed. I mean, there's so many nonprofits and, you know, across the country. And, of course, we have so many here locally. And I think it's just this huge cadre of what do I choose? Where do I go? And I think, you know, we are... That's why I mentioned some of those partners that they're trying to help us figure out what are those, you know, reasons and what people think. You know, I know time, people, you know, have a lot of time commitments. But, you know, I think as we become more in tune with, you know, the volunteer experience, I think those questions will be answered.
I agree.
Do you think part of it could be also because you think of the Red Cross as something that's kind of eternal, that and from the sounds of it, the staffing's fairly lean.
Yeah.
That there is an assumption that there are far more resources there than there really are. That I don't need to volunteer the Red Cross. They've got a ton of money. They got a ton of people. I'll go someplace else.
I think it's also yes. I do think that that's a component of it. The company that we're working with is really all about designing a program, a volunteer program, around the end user, and that means two components. How easy do we make it for them to sign up to volunteer with us? And then how satisfying do they find it? Those are two things that we're focused on right now and optimizing both of those components. And I think that will help us a lot in garnering more volunteer support.
Where historically have you found your volunteers? The folks now who are, you know, mature vintage.
Good term. I think,
has some application here, too. So, yeah.
Well, I think from a branding standpoint, it's easy for us to, you know, people know our name and know our brand. So I think a lot of it is, you know, word of mouth and, you know, those types of experiences. And then I think, you know, just seeing our brand, I think people just kind of resonate toward it. And I think, you know, Chad Priest is our CEO, and he always likes to say that a lot of people, maybe they realize it or not, but at every stage in their life, there is some touch point within the Red Cross. When you were first born, you know, that nurse is Red Cross trained. When you, you know, CPR classes and, you know, babysitting and, you know, all of these different stages in your life, when you give blood, I mean, the Red Cross is always there. So
we've got the big party coming up then. On Saturday, are there still ways for people to plug in if they want to attend And if so, how do they go about doing that?
There is, you know, there are ways to obviously, you know, we want people to come out first and foremost. And, you know, as Barb mentioned with the hats, you know, come on out. And if you're interested in volunteering or thinking about it, obviously, you know, we can, you know, sign you up right on the spot.
Right. And then we have a, an Eventbrite page. We also have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Do you want to give them the...
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you go to our website, redcross.org, and if you get to the our local page, you'll see in the left-hand column our Centennial Celebration page. And that has all of the information, whether you want to purchase tickets. Tickets for our VIP are $100 a piece. And obviously the free event from 6 to 10. And it has all the information, our social media. And, you know, again, the theme is feel the power of volunteering. And so, you know, we want people to come out and, you know, share their experiences, get social with us. And
The public-facing part, the that's free to the public, mm-hmm. that's also very family-friendly. Mm-hmm. So please feel free to bring your whole family out, and there'll be life-size games, and we're partnering with Big Car. Mm-hmm. They've created a mural for us, so that paint-by-numbers, it's a life-size mural. We'll have both the VIP and the public portion of the event painting on the circle. That's why we're calling it Mural on the Circle.
Yes. And you do not have to be a painter.
No.
This is for the novice painter. Exactly. Well,
that would be good in this case. But so how large a crowd do you anticipate having there?
Well, our capacity is probably 1,400. I don't think we'll get that many.
Okay.
I'm hopeful for 900 outside. And at the VIP reception, it's about 250.
About 250. And how many people have you got coming already? How many?
Probably about 190, maybe 200. So we still have room.
So you've still got a little bit of room.
Sure.
But people should not dawdle.
No.
And if they want to make reservations to that, they can do it online?
Yes.
Or can they call and just give you a credit card number?
Absolutely.
Both.
What would be the best number to call?
That 317-684-1441. And they can immediately contact us, and we can get them hooked up with, you know, that person to help them.
Okay, and then real quickly, because we're starting to get a little bit tight on time here, because volunteers are the most pressing need, what is the quickest and easiest way for them to get plugged in to volunteering for the Red Cross if they choose to do so, Duchess?
If they go to redcross.org/feel the power, that is the quickest way, easiest way for them to immediately get plugged in.
And there they'll find like an inventory of
all
skills
of our
volunteer. Or opportunities are. And
absolutely.
You can kind of match yourself up. And if they want to have a conversation, again, the same number that they call you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And will they call you directly, or with whom will they be speaking?
That's our main number.
Your main number.
Let me give it one more time, too.
Okay, please.
317-684-1441.
Well, I think that's a good last word. I'd like to thank both of you for what has been an illuminating conversation. Wish you both well on the big birthday bash.
Thank you.
On Saturday. I hope it goes very, very well. I'd like to thank my guests, Barb Curry. She's the Chief Development Officer for the Indiana Region of the Red Cross, and Duchess Ajay. She is the Regional Communication Director for the Indiana Region of the Red Cross. Also, like to thank our listeners. And I would like to welcome them back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about the mass transit referendum here on No Limits. Promises to be a lively conversation. I hope you all will join us. I am John Krall. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.